not an area where pillows and blankets are going to be coming in because they've been piled into a crib. We don't have more information on what's in the crib, and that's what Lena's project is is going to be working.
There's really no evidence to say that a portable crib would be as safe.
Well, in terms of testing on portable cribs, I think Consumer Product Safety Commission, the crib that's being used by the Cribs for Kids of Graco, has been tested extensively for safety purposes. So when you compare, well, because all the problems we're having with cribs right now is all the hardware, the plastic that is instead of using metal, they're using plastic to hold up these drop side crib, the plastic's failing. People are using used cribs, and when they put them back together, they either don't have the parts or know how to put them back together. So that's one of the problems with cribs if you look at the Consumer Product Safety Commission.
In essence of time, we're actually going to move to the next presentation and hold questions to the end after all.
I can see we got some questions. Hi, good morning. I'm Terry Covington. I'm the director of the National Center for Child Death Review, which is funded through Maternal Child Health Bureau at HRSA. And we're sort of doing this we couldn't quite figure out our order, but what I wanted to do, Lena talked about the case registry. Mary talked about a lot of the data that we acquired prior to the case registry from our reporting states. And I'm going to talk a little bit about how to use the child death review process to actually get a better understanding of these deaths, and then what some of the states and communities are doing as a result of it. I notice a lot of child death review folks in the room. Hello, everyone. It's really your work out there doing these reviews that is helping us better understand what's going on with our babies. My objectives are to describe at least 8 elements necessary for an effective review, at least 3 of the outcomes that have resulted from reviews, and identify some of the steps that are being taken in people's communities to improve child deaths, to improve their child death review and prevent other deaths. Child death review, in a nutshell, is just very simply a multidisciplinary case review of infant and child deaths. Happens all over the country except in the state of Iowa. It happens in 37 states at a local level where there are local-based teams. In 12 states, it's happening at state-based teams, and those are typically smaller population states. When there's local teams, right now we have 34 states providing data into the National Child Death Review Case Reporting System. 5 more are on the docket to start entering cases in January. So it's really pretty, we've become a somewhat robust system. I'm going to go through the 8 elements of what needs to happen to have this really work. Lena already mentioned a multidisciplinary review, and that's Carolyn Fowler's wonderful picture that I use all the time, and everybody loves it. I'm so welcome. It really, to make this work, it's got to be multidisciplinary because you've got to hear from lots of perspectives. It's a no blame, no shame process. People are bringing information to the table and trying to understand from bringing their perspectives to the table so that they can understand what's going on. There oftentimes is disagreement, but the whole point is to try to understand what's happening in these deaths so that you can do something about the risk factors. The other piece that's really important, and Lena touched on this, is you've got to share multiple case records. You can't do this just by looking at an autopsy report or even a death scene investigation report. You've got to bring lots of records. And the more records you bring to the table, the better you're going to have your review be, and the more information you'll know. People find that out all the time. It's one of the early outcomes of reviews. All of a sudden, law enforcement might have access to a CPS record or to a public health nursing visit report that tells a lot more about the family and the situation and the death than without those kinds of records. The other important piece is the review needs to be comprehensive to really get to outcomes. So we talk about improving investigations and diagnoses, improving services and systems, and then doing something with all that information to improve your prevention initiatives. And underneath and wrapping all of that is you're really improving interagency collaboration and coordination. Those things at the top might happen, but what I hear from folks all the time is they often happen just because we start talking to each other at the local and state level, whereas we didn't used to do that before. I can't tell you how many times I'll be in a community where people will say, I didn't even know the name of the medical examiner in our community, and now I call them all the time when I have questions. I'll hear that from public health nurses, and vice versa. Surprising. So one of the first pieces when you're looking at SUID cases is it's the team. We try to encourage the teams to focus on improving the investigations, because if you have poor investigations, you're not going to have good information to feed into a case registry or even give us more information. So we encourage the teams to ask a set of questions when they're doing their reviews, after they've shared information on the case. Who took the lead in the investigation? Was it coordinated? If not, how can we coordinate it in the future? Was there even an autopsy? I remember 10 years ago, and a lot of these deaths, there weren't autopsies. And an important question to ask the medical examiner or coroner was, why not? Do you think maybe next time we can do them? What do you need? What kind of resources do you need to do autopsies? Are you running out of money? I remember in Michigan when we worked with Child Death Review years ago, if you died the first half of the year, you were going to get an autopsy, but they ran out of money. And so those were important resource issues that the teams could help help improve. Was there a scene investigation? This whole improvement, I've got pictures from the CDC SUID investigation tools. There's just been an enormous improvement across the country with teams starting to do really comprehensive scene investigations, including dowel reenactments and scene recreations. That has told us so much, given us just such much, given us so much more richer information on a case. I can think of scenes where you've seen a bed, but you didn't really know where the baby was on that bed. But when there's been a scene recreation and a doll can be placed there, and then you can understand how the baby was really found, it tells a whole different story. What other types of investigations happened? And then what were the key findings in that investigation? Was it adequate? Does the community need resources to do more comprehensive investigations in the future? And then that's really the last piece, is what can we do to help our investigative systems? And I think that's part of doing these reviews has really helped improve systems. This would be an example of a scene recreation using a doll. I know some of you aren't familiar with this. Many of you are. But so a person would go to the scene after the death in a very caring and compassionate way. In our state, for example, we use public health nurses to do this that are trained as forensics, and they work closely with the medical examiner's office. And they have the family describe where they fell asleep and what it was like when they woke up and found the baby. We wouldn't have known in a situation normally like this that this was probably an overlay. Another situation is we often found cases where the baby was in a bassinet and they died, but until the family can say, well, this was the bedding that was placed on the baby when I found the baby, that gives you a whole different perspective than just saying I found the baby in the bassinet. So those are some examples of what you can learn with scene investigations. They'll also give you, you know, you'll learn a lot more about entrapment and suffocation by going back and recreating the scenes. Another element of effective child death review is to help inform the diagnosis. You notice I used inform, not dictate the diagnosis. It's a very fine line working with medical examiners and coroners to help bring them information to inform their diagnosis, but it's not the purpose of child death review to tell medical examiner what the diagnosis is. And it's just really important to make that distinguishing factor. But across the country, there's been a lot of work with medical examiners and coroners thinking a little differently about how they diagnose these deaths once they get good scene information. This was a study that was done by the Scripps Howard News Service in 2000 and 2004. And it's pretty simple. It's pretty basic. It's not very sophisticated. But they looked at the one state that didn't have child death review, which is Idaho. And then they looked at states that had state and local reviews. I'm a real proponent of local-based review teams. And they found that the suffocation rate had more than doubled where there were reviews being conducted at the local level, the assumption being that the reviews were helping to drive some of the information and improving the investigations, leading to an increase in suffocation rates and a decrease in undetermined and SIDS. And the same thing happened with the homicides. Another element is improving services. When you do reviews, it's really important to make sure that the families are well taken care of after these deaths and that systems and services are improved as a result of doing your reviews. So some of the questions you could ask during a good review were, are there any services that the family was accessing prior to the death? If they weren't, why not? Were there services provided to the family as a result of the death? And if there weren't, do we need to make referrals? Do we not have the services in place? What can we do to improve what we have? even taking care of first responders and folks that were involved in the death investigation is important. And then following up the questions about what are we going to do to improve services in our community based on what we know about these deaths. And then for me, as a public health person, where the rubber hits the road is identifying the risk factors in the deaths and then figuring out which ones you can modify. This is a pretty, I think I got this from FEMA a long time ago. And there's a lot of risk factors on here that a local community or even a state's not going to be able to do anything about. But the trick with the child death review teams is to figure out which ones they can do something about. And maybe that's improving, changing families' beliefs about sleep positions with their babies or getting rid of faulty cribs or inadequate housing issues. We know when we look at a lot of our situations, somebody was talking about cribs. One of the reasons Cribs for Kids went with the Graco cribs is that especially in urban areas, Dr. Kemp from St. Louis University in Missouri had done some work to show that congested or family homes in the urban areas oftentimes don't have places for large size cribs, and so that's one of the reasons families weren't using them, or if they had them, they were using them for other things because they didn't have room for dressers and other things. So, those are just some of the things that you can tie into when you're looking at your cases. Identify the risk. So, we've been through this before. Risk is one of the risks, just the fact that you had a parent bed and that's where the baby was sleeping and there was no place else to keep it. The whole issue of not just risk, but protective factors, the role of breastfeeding and our babies being breastfed safely and then being put to sleep safely after breastfeeding, the role of bottle feeding. Overheating is a big issue, and the whole issue of swaddling. We were just at the International SIDS meeting, and there's some real interesting work coming out of looking at swaddling as a protective factor when the babies are put to sleep on their backs. And also, one of the issues with back to sleep, a lot of people complain about is their babies don't sleep well. But there's some new work showing that swaddling can actually help the babies sleep well when they're on their backs. And then the use of pacifiers. These are just some of the pieces you can pick up doing child death review to help identify risk, because we know for some reason pacifiers seem to be protective for SIDS. And then the other element of effective reviews is to report out on what you have. If you're not reporting it out, it's hard to collect and look at trend data across the board, and that's what our case reporting system does. And then my last one, since we're in Colorado, it's going to snow. It is snowing in the mountains today. It's the whole issue of preventing deaths, and that's really what the reviews are all about. You can do all this other stuff. If you don't get to this, I say you're sort of wasting your time. That's not really true, but with the prevention, what we've discovered with safe sleep sort of things in these SUID cases, it's that there's a myriad of layers to think about when you're looking at prevention, whether that's educating families at childbirth classes and in hospitals. Pennsylvania just passed a new law, about a month ago, requiring education for families on safe sleep at the time before they leave the hospital with their new babies. That was pretty profound. It'll be really interesting to see what happens in Pennsylvania in terms of their SUID rates. Assessments by nurses with families to see how the babies are in their sleep environments. And actually, another piece of this is assessing the nurses' practices related to sleep environments. I can think of many reviews where people said that, they found out that the nurses were actually practicing side sleeping as a safe practice. And so one of the outcomes of reviews would be that someone from that team would go and work with the hospitals to change the nursing habits. Crib distribution programs, safe sleep education campaigns, which I'm going to talk about in a minute, are all over the place. Working with the Consumer Product Safety Commission on unsafe sleep places, and even thinking about licensing requirements for daycare providers. We've seen a lot of changes on that across the country where daycare programs and daycare providers have to receive safe sleep education and demonstrate that they've got their babies in safe places. We did this, one of the things related back here to the whole safe sleep education campaigns and others is one of the things we're discovering, though, is that people are all over the place in the U.S., and people are really struggling with what is a safe sleep education, or what does a safe sleep promotion campaign look like? And we surveyed all of the state MCH programs and the state child death review programs to sort of get a handle on what was going on in the states. And it's pretty amazing because people are all over the place with their messaging. We got 37 states that answered the survey. And brochures and pamphlets is the big winner. And that's what most you know, like, what, a 30, almost 33 states. There was only one state that said they weren't doing anything. Hospital discharge instruction, I thought that was interesting. A lot of states are doing that. Crib distribution is pretty, you know, half of the states are doing it. And then you saw some kind of mass media stuff, whether that's radio, TVs, newsletters, et cetera. And then a number of states are starting to incorporate safe sleep into their home visiting as a standard of practice. But it's a little bit all over the place. The other thing that we thought was really interesting, and we've talked about the AAP guidelines, and they're going to have new guidelines coming out shortly. But the AAP guidelines is a pretty strong, long set of stuff that tells you how to sleep your baby safely. Everything from back to sleep to baby in a crib to no overheating, et cetera. So we asked the states which messages are explicit in all of your safe sleep, and we were sort of surprised. That not a lot of the messages are showing up in campaigns across the states. The one that kind of dismayed me with the most was the no prenatal smoking. It's not showing, it's not being tied closely with safe sleep campaigns, even though we know secondhand smoke is, and prenatal smoking is a real risk factor for SUIDs. Back to sleep is certainly pretty much with everybody, but as you go through this, you'll see that there's real differences in the messaging. 22 of the states are using no bed sharing. That's still a pretty political issue in a number of states. It's not something that a lot of state health departments or even social services are willing to come out publicly and say they're going to support a no bed sharing message in a strong way. So they're sort of all over the place on some of these. So it gives you a sense of the struggles, I think, that we're all facing in trying to figure out what a consistent, comprehensive message is to get out there. The other thing is that the partners, it's not always the health department that are out there doing this. This is a billboard from Delaware, and it came out of their attorney general's office. The health department was a little slow on the message, so their children's commission and their attorney general's office said, well, we're just going to do something. So they launched a bus board campaign in Delaware. In my state, in Michigan, a number of years back, the state health department wasn't quite ready to go out publicly with a strong safe sleep campaign that it discouraged bed sharing, so the Department of Social Services did it. They created waiting room videos and a lot of other things, and they were the ones that sort of took the lead first, and then eventually the health department caught up, and now they have a coalition that works together. And that's the other thing we're seeing. These are the lead agencies that are sort of taking the lead on the safe sleep stuff in the states. It's not always public health. The other, though, is interesting because a lot of this work now is being done through coalitions. So safe sleep coalitions are just multi-agency coalitions rather than individual agencies, which I think is really important and wonderful. I was going to give a couple examples, but I think I really would rather have Lindsay talk about how they've done theirs. I wanted to just talk about how Child Death Review, this is Cribs for Kids, we mentioned it earlier, but this evolved out of a Child Death Review team in Pennsylvania, Allegheny County. They reviewed 6 babies who had died, none of them were in cribs, so that team organized a coalition, started a Safe Kids a Cribs for Kids distribution program in Pennsylvania, or in Pittsburgh. That became so successful that other places around Pittsburgh wanted to, or around Pennsylvania wanted to do it, so they expanded throughout Pennsylvania. It has never really been rigorously evaluated, but as of today, all 6,500 babies that got cribs in Pennsylvania made it to their, or in Pittsburgh, made it to their first birthday. I don't know, that's sort of an evaluation for me. And this is where they are now across the country, so they've really expanded. But that all started from one death review team. In a city, and I think it's pretty profound, actually. This is another example of a comprehensive program. Minnesota has a website, and you can get all kinds of stuff from their website. This is just an example of what a state-led initiative would look like. They've also developed a lot of their materials in other languages, which is pretty special. And we tell our teams all the time, you know, it might be something as complex as what Minnesota's doing, but it might also be as simple as finding a bad product and letting the Consumer Product Safety Commission know. This was a team in California that had a death in a child's bed. They called the CPSC, and these beds were recalled, even though they're really cool looking. I just want to give you an idea. These are our resources. If you're interested in child death review and you want more information on it, we're at childdeathreview.org or info@childdeathreview.org, and we have a lot of resources for how to do reviews, and that's what we do is training and technical assistance, so thank you. Anybody, I can take one or two questions.